This week, the Rascals' mints about Trump's distractions, the GOP's distance, and the incredible Michael Phelps.
Today is Friday. It's the 12th of August, 2016. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, our weekly podcast, part of which can be heard on my show Saturdays at 1:30 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN, noon every day.
And I'm Ryan Burrow. I'm a reporter with WGN Radio and a Midwest correspondent for ABC News Radio.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be in.
Normally, Kristen McQuarrie and Eric Zorn are in the fold here. They're busy interviewing candidates as we get closer and closer to the election. So let's start a little bit there. It's hard to imagine a worse week on the campaign trail than this week was for, wait for it, Hillary Clinton. Unless, of course, you count any week from Donald Trump. Hillary's had a bad week, don't you guys think?
Well, she would have. I mean, if anyone... It wasn't taking up the spotlight to keep the bad week away from her. I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
Very badly put, right? But this could have been a terrible week for her. Trump got in the way of that.
Think about the opportunity that the Republican candidate would have had if there would have been some breathing room for reporters to actually report about the father of the Orlando gunman being in the crowd at the Hillary Clinton rally in the background. I mean, the optics were just awful, but it was completely wiped out by the fact that Donald Trump mentioned the Second Amendment people. It completely dominated the news cycle.
To mention nothing of the email release and the more information about that. But let's just talk about the optics of that for a second, since you brought it up, Ryan. Steve, how bad is it that the Orlando shooter's father was in the frame behind Hillary Clinton?
Well, who's the bad? I guess the bad is you have to figure out everyone who's sitting behind the candidate. I mean, so maybe it's an advance bad. I don't think it's a reflection on the campaign at all, or I mean on her and what she stands for. Optics, yeah, I guess it's bad optics, and maybe next time they'll just have to, maybe it's time to get rid of those people behind the candidate. Remember,
she was always so staged.
She was embarrassed after the Iowa caucuses by that knuckleheaded student who kept making weird faces. Do you remember
that?
Oh,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. But Ryan, you're the one that brought it up. I mean, really, it's just visually awkward, but there's nothing else to glean from this, right?
Well, no. And Secret Service says, look, we screen everyone the exact same way. We don't necessarily know the names of the people coming through the doors, but we check them, we pat them down, we make sure that they don't have any weapons on them. But, you know, you've got Florida is obviously a very important state in this election. And, you know, you think that before things got going, and believe me, I've been to these rallies and campaigns, there's a lot of time before that candidate hits the stage. Sometimes these things are supposed to go off at 5 o'clock and the candidates don't hit the stage till after 7. So there was plenty of time there to look and see who was in that audience.
Again, that's something that might have hurt her, but then Trump offered a delicious alternative.
And by that you mean when he was speaking.
He said, look, he says, I'm sorry, John, but he says, look, the people behind me, they all know me. They're not, you know, it's not an accident that they're behind me. And the implication
right, and who's waving back to him, Steve?
Mark Foley, the former congressman who left in disgrace for lewd text to, was it interns?
Yeah, well, it was underage
pages,
males,
yeah,
and it was
yeah.
nude sex. It was nude photos to underage boys.
So here's Trump saying, yeah, these people are my friends. You know, I know these people.
And that seat was reserved for Foley, and Foley could not have been more happy to be there. So what do we make of that, Ryan? I mean, is that bad optics, or he'll take the endorsement of Foley if Foley wants to endorse him?
Yeah, I just, you know, same scenario. Like, you can't control everyone who's in there. Obviously, this is a voter, a supporter. And so, you know, I actually think that maybe Donald Trump's words got more in the way than any of those optics from either of the camps this week, you know, with the Second Amendment stuff. And with the ISIS stuff.
Right. To me, that's the takeaway from all of this. And we'll go on to those other issues now. But when you look at the people behind the candidates or the guy climbing the building with the candidate's name, you can't derive anything from that, right?
No.
And if those people do or don't want to vote for one of the candidates, that's fine. But unless they're holding them up as a champion of some cause, then it's really just a distraction from, okay, Donald Trump saying that, and I've got the quote exactly here for you, but it was about the Second Amendment. Hold on. My computer just closed. Donald Trump said Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. Okay, Steve Bertrand, what do we make of that? He for 2 days he said he meant it, and now he said it was sarcasm.
He has no filter. He says things that maybe he doesn't mean, but he thinks are a clever turn of the phrase, or he doesn't realize what they mean. He can't help himself. He clearly said it. It was insulting, the statement from the campaign later that said that the Second Amendment people he was referring to might marshal the votes to keep her out of office. That's clearly not what he said. He talked about if she wins, she gets to do this unless the Second Amendment people step in. So, you know, I think the efforts by the campaign were almost as bad as the efforts by the candidate.
What about you, Ryan?
I think this is another example. You can just see that Donald Trump doesn't have a lot of Republican friends, because what in a situation like this, normally people would come running to the rescue. Oh, come on. You know, he's joking. Let's move on to the subject. But, you know, a lot of Republicans took this and said, oh, my goodness. And they all backed away from him. Senator Bob Corker, another person who said, that's not right. He shouldn't be saying stuff like that. And, you know, normally if it's a Mitt Romney or McCain or something like that, some people would come to his aid and say, okay, let's move on. That really isn't anything. But it just didn't seem like that was the case this time.
With one exception, I mean, at least Chris Christie has had the good sense to go away. Rudy Giuliani won't, right? And Rudy Giuliani's at the same event and talking about how you'd have to have a corrupt mind, and the corrupt Clintons, only they could surmise that Donald Trump said something bad there.
Well,
he's going to be the second biggest loser in November.
Giuliani.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks that Donald Trump wants Hillary Clinton shot, and nobody thinks that Donald Trump was calling for somebody to do that, right? Are we all on that same page?
I think he was definitely catering to the NRA wing of the party. I mean, he was trying to solidify that. No, I don't think so. I mean, look, she went to his wedding, right? I mean, I don't think they like each other, but I think they've been in the same circles for a long time.
I think he thought he was saying something cute and turning
clever
a clever phrase.
Sure,
and
sure.
It just speaks to the fact that he doesn't realize that what a candidate
or a
president says.
Well, then why are we beating him up so much about it?
Because the implication is terrible. Who cares if it's clever or not? What he said was, what he implied was that a fanatic could shoot her, or, you know, shoot
sure,
her, right?
And,
Second
and
Amendment.
And then isn't it kind of intriguing that a couple of days later, a fanatic who's not maybe mentally well decides to scale his building in the hopes of getting an audience with him? If people will go to those lengths to get his attention, you know, ask Ronald Reagan's kids the lengths to which people will go to get somebody's attention, right? So it is that dangerous. And, you know, to me, another way to sort of pull something from this is, imagine Donald Trump is the master of the two-edged quip talking to or about China and say, now, you know, something, and then them being horrified.
Right.
And they're a very insular kind of people.
During the Chinese New Year, he could tweet pictures of himself eating egg rolls, something
right.
like that.
I love China. China loves me. Really. So, you know, if we have trouble playing on our own backyard with this, imagine how the rest of the world would, with interpretations and body language and protocols, imagine how they would process something like this were it said about one of their leaders or people, you know.
So does anyone think I don't want to say doesn't have a chance to win, because that would just be falling into the same trap we've fallen into for the past year. But this seems to be, if you watch the people on TV, Republicans as well, that there's a growing consensus that this race is over.
Well, Ryan Priebus, I mean, every week it's another letter, right? A couple of weeks ago, it was 50 top Homeland Security and other similarly disposed experts saying that Trump does not have the temperament. And then you had a senator, four representatives, and another almost 50 people signing a letter this week. Republicans, all of them, saying that the party needs to distance himself from him. And then Ryan Priebus himself saying stuff like that in a letter with others this week. Well, here's what I want you guys to react to. What about this? All of that, and what's the margin? In some polls, one midweek this week, after all of that, it was the Ipsos Reuters poll, Hillary was up 6 points. Six. I mean, the difference was 6 points. 6 points. If he can get away with that, I still think he has time to recover. That tells you how unpopular Hillary Clinton is, Steve.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and there still will be the debates, and most people think that he won't do well there, but should he? And should there be more You know, should Julian Assange weigh in a little further?
Oh, man, that's a wild card.
Maybe something happens there. I don't know.
Yeah, there's supposed to be that October surprise that he's preparing. So we'll see if anything happens there. But, you know, really, it's tough because if you look at the popular vote, you're always going to get pretty close here, regardless of candidate X versus Y. But really, if you start digging into these numbers and looking at some of these what were considered once swing states, Florida, Virginia, Ohio, Clinton has built a fairly healthy lead by 5 points or more in some of these states. So, you know, all the indications are she is looking pretty good at this point. We all saw what happened to President Obama after that. Was that second debate against Mitt Romney, or was it the first debate where he really, really struggled?
Right.
And all of a sudden, the polls swung the other way. So much can change. But, you know, she's starting to get into areas and go into states that were not blue before. You know, and she's starting to campaign, and she's putting pressure on Donald Trump in Utah.
Right.
Utah, of all places.
And, you know, and we didn't have this on our list, but that McMullen, have you seen much of McMullen, the new independent candidate, John?
No.
Very impressive guy. He's a
not Johnson, not McMullen.
No, no. This is an independent who announced, you know, he was
former CIA operative.
He a longtime staffer on Capitol Hill, and he's sort of the anyone but Trump Republicans candidate now, in a way. He's Mormon. So the assumption is he'll do well in Utah. So that could take more votes away. But, yeah, you know what? You should check this guy out because I saw an extended interview with him. Very bright, very measured guy, a very impressive guy. He's got everything but name recognition, money, and widespread support.
Well, then, except that'd be like I'd be in the NBA if I was just a little taller and could shoot.
Well, and unfortunately, that's how we choose the presidents. But this guy has got something to say, I think, and definitely something to offer to the debate.
Okay. Well, we'll continue to follow all of that. Just real quickly, guys, both candidates announced their economic policies. And the economist that I heard from said that, you know, both of them have pie in the sky attributes, but Hillary's is a little more realistic. And, you know, that's just another one of those things that piles on where you then say, well, who are those academic, liberal, you know, agenda-laden academics or elitists, you know? So I don't know that stuff like that is necessarily going to move the needle. Was there anything in either of their economic addresses that jumped out at either of you guys?
No, and I followed Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail immediately after the convention in both Ohio and Pennsylvania, and the speech that we saw this week in Michigan, essentially the same thing. She likes the small business. Her family in Park Ridge had a silk screening company that she worked at. She understands the needs of everyone. She also talked about, you know, making the wealthy pay more to create a better economy. So a lot of more red meat.
And you know, also the Clintons are releasing their taxes from last year. Tim Kaine, for the past 10 years, I think Hillary is disclosing she made about $1.5 million, a little less than that in speaking fees last year. So that'll fuel things. But, you know, it just keeps – there's an analyst, a piece in the New York Times today with an analyst saying that it wouldn't surprise him if Donald Trump actually paid no taxes recently because – the rules are set up so much to favor the wealthy and in real estate. And so, you know, we'll see if they have any success. Well, they're not. There's nothing could make him release his tax returns if he paid nothing, I guess.
Let's talk a little bit about the Olympics and feel good about the USA. Ryan, what is one of your favorite stories? You've been covering the Chicago athletes and talking about it on ABC and WGN. What's one of your favorite stories or things going on at the Olympics this year?
I think after week one, I think we look at the Olympics and say, think about how many young girls, or boys for that matter, are going to get into gymnastics now because of what they saw this week. Getting that first look of gymnastics and saying, Mom and Dad, I want to do that. I want to try that. And likewise, think about swimming as well. Kids that maybe had never gotten in a pool before, maybe kids in areas where they're, you know, just have summer swimming, you know, they actually want to get into it. So, I you know, the full effect we won't see for years, but oh my gosh, Michael Phelps is... There's no one more dominating than that man.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not very good sometimes at giving credit or at recognizing the moment. And, you know, we are in the presence right now of, what, the best Olympian ever? And we're watching him at night after night. And, you know, it might become boring to us to watch him get yet another gold medal, but it seems to make an impression on him every time. I mean, I think just the greatness of him and all that he's done and overcome is the story for me. so far.
Well, I like how and we're forgiving may not be the right word, but we like Michael Phelps again. You know, don't you think he was kind of he and that Ryan Lochte were put in the same box, maybe deservedly so, and we thought they were a little waterlogged, those two, and we were done with them, and then they had problems out of the pool, and then Phelps returns a little more mature. He's got the hoodie on. He's focused. And I found it easier to cheer for him than it has been in a long time.
Yep, I agree with that. And I want to say thanks to Ryan for sitting in with us for a while. He's got other duties to do.
Oh, what a shame. Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And off he goes. By the way, Steve, this would have been a good question for Ryan, but I'm going to ask it to you, and you're not exactly chopped liver.
No, well.
Okay, so Lily King, the American swimmer, 19 years old, wins the gold as soon as she jumps in the pool. And before and after, she's dissing her Russian counterpart, who gets the silver in the lane next to her because she had tested positive for doping. She was ruled eligible to swim in the games, but that wasn't good for Lily King. And King said this, that if you've ever failed a drug test, you shouldn't be able to compete in the Olympics. And Michelle Tafoya said, "You mean like ever?" And she said, right. And then they said, okay, what about American sprinters who are going to be in the games, previously tested positive, now are clean, and they're going to run? Should they not be at the Olympics either? And she said, no. They call that the nuclear option. What do you think of that? Once and you're out forever.
Well, if you that's a good question. I hadn't heard any of that. I suppose if you test positive for something that clearly is bad once, it shows you're a cheat. But there are also people who, well, they say they inadvertently took something or rubbed something on them that gave them, I don't know. I mean, I think you should probably, I think that's probably a little harsh. I think you should be, look, you know, like you just said, Michael Phelps redeemed himself. Why not give people a chance to redeem themselves?
Michael Vick got to play football again, although abusing dogs didn't give him a competitive advantage on the football field, and I think that's the concern, that there might still be some residual competitive advantage to previously cheated. But I don't know. And if the governing body, however, for whatever reason, decides to let you swim, I think you got to let that person swim and then beat him in the water, which she did. From that, I want to go to just at the end of last week's podcast, we talked about Paul O'Neill, the young man who stole the Jaguar in Bolingbrook and was shot by Chicago police. The video was released as we were recording last week's podcast. We've all had a chance to look at some of those videos and come to a better understanding of what happened. The big takeaway for me, Steve, is that 2 days of training for the 12,000 Chicago police is not going to be enough. It's just going to be a long, slow grind to change the attitude for police to realize that when they are pissed off,
right,
they still can't shoot the guy, even though he might shoot them. It will backfire on you. It'll hurt your career. You could go to jail if you do that. And I don't know how they – I don't know if I could be so reserved when I'm that angry, but you'll go to jail. You'll lose your job. It's going to be bad for everybody if you pull that trigger, and they've got to get that message.
Well, I think you said it at the beginning. It's going to take more than 2 days training. Of course it is, because this is a long-term sort of ingrained culture, maybe is the right word. I'm not sure. I don't want to say behavior, but, you know, so it obviously it will. It's not – you can't snap a finger, your fingers, and make it go away. It's going to take some time. The good news is it looks as if there's commitments to take that time and to make the changes.
Last thing, let's do this. Our recommendation of the week, something we are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming. I just want to say, as the Olympics continue and everybody's watching NBC, you're dialed into Channel 5, but they're actually running the games on 8 of their networks or platforms. And the one that I've been really enjoying is NBCSC, the old sports channel for NBC, because that's where you'll find badminton and, you know, pairs table tennis or stuff you know the Olympics has, but it sure ain't going to be on prime time on Channel 5.
We ran into men's handball the other day.
Isn't that amazing?
And they're like, what sport is this? You know, they're running around. It's like field hockey, but they're throwing the ball. And I had to look it up to find out that it was handball.
We were watching judo and had no idea what the object of the game was. We didn't even know what they – we knew that they were angry with each other,
right,
and they had on darling robes, and that's all we could tell. But then, you know, we all recognize ping pong or table tennis and what that looks like. And the skill these people bring to it is just amazing. And I'm actually looking forward to rhythmic gymnastics, for crying out loud.
You know, they trained, a lot of them trained locally, the rhythmic, I can't say it, rhythmic gymnastics.
Well, I interviewed the mother.
The gymnasticians.
I interviewed one of those girls' mother because she's from Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's one of those classic things where the kid leaves home. But instead of going to Bella Caroli's camp in Florida, though, they went to Northbrook and they trained there. For
Deerfield, by the way.
Was it Deerfield?
I think it's in Deerfield.
Thank you. And, you know, for to what end, I'm not exactly sure. Like, swimmers and gymnasts will have careers. They will profit from that, many of them. Not so much rhythmic gymnasticists.
You know where they are, unless I'm mistaken? I don't think I'm not mistaken. They're in the SAC Center, which is the Deerfield run sort of public recreation, but that's what used to be the multiplex.
So, oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so where the Bulls used to train before the Birdo Center, before where they are now, they trained at the multiplex, and that's now the SAC Center. That's where these gymnasts were doing some of their training.
Well, it's just a beautiful sport, and I'm really excited for these athletes, but you wonder, I mean, we wonder if the trade of your free time, your life,
right,
for the gold medal is worth it. And if it's something as obscure as rhythmic gymnastics, I think that question gets even more difficult to answer. But whatever, they're doing it, and it's amazing to see what the human body is capable of.
There's a lot to be said for a ribbon endorsement, though. Right? You'll see their pictures in Hallmark stores around the country.
I'm telling you, I'm watching Simone Biles. She's not a rhythmic gymnast. And I'm just going, wow, I have the same number of chromosomes as her.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
What did I do with mine? Yeah.
Okay, so that's my recommendation, the sports channel for NBC.
Okay. I just finished rereading Jaws.
I didn't. What a funny thing you just said. I didn't.
Well, so I'm kind of been laid up a little bit, so I've been, you know, I'm tired of Netflix and trying to find a book. And like, it's summer. I was at a bookstore with my daughter, a half price store, and it was just sitting there for $5. I'm like, what the heck, you know? So I picked up Jaws and just finished rereading it last night.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's fun. Have you read it recently?
Oh, God, no, but yeah. It's one of the first novels, literally, that I read for fun. I remember the summer I read it. God, that was a page-turner.
It was a page-turner, but it was 1974 it came out. So when you go back and think, so that's, you know, 6 years from 68 and the race riots and the assassinations. And reading it, the way race was referred to a few times, I was kind of... I don't want to say taken aback, but
really,
yeah, it just speak. You know, they're referring to keeping the blacks happy and things like that in the novel. So it was a page turner. It was fun, but it also was a bit of a view of that time in our history.
How about that? So our recommendations are
the
Sports Channel and and Jaws, which is a brand new book that came out just 40 years ago.
Wait, get this: Richard Dreyfuss dies in the book.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, I'd forgotten that part.
Yeah, me too. Well, thank you, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Normally you hear Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. They're writers, columnists, and editorial writers over there.
Big thanks to Ryan Burrow as well.
Yeah, absolutely, from WGN Radio and ABC News. Okay, Steve, we'll do it again next week. Thanks, by the way, to Kristen Decker, our producer, and Bob Ferguson. I'm John Williams. I'm going to be away from my Saturday show for the next couple of weeks. But I'll be back there, late August, mid-September, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!